Greetings, everybody. This is Leonard Maltin. You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and I'm glad you are. We are joined today by my offspring.
Offspring!
Jesse Maltin.
As my dad likes to say, nepotism starts at home.
That's right. And stealing my jokes now?
Well, I gave you credit for it.
I know, but you did, but I have such a small repertory. If you remove them—
Do you mean repertoire? Repertoire?
Yes, I do mean repertoire.
Repertoire?
Yes.
Do you want to start again?
She corrected me. We're off to a bad start. But it's going to get better now.
It's going to get better now.
Much, much better now because we have another guest today.
We do have another guest. Actually, along the lines of nepotism starts at home is house guests, nothing is free. You think it's free. You think it's free, but nothing is free. My friend Danny has been staying with us, and what she didn't know is that she was going to be on the podcast today.
Proper name, Danielle Hope.
Danielle Hope. I even, because it's awkward otherwise to try and describe your friend as from your end, so I'm going to read to you. Danielle Hope is an English actress and singer. She is the winner of the BBC talent contest Over the Rainbow, and as a result, played the part of Dorothy in the Andrew Lloyd Webber production of The Wizard of Oz, which began performances in the West End at the London Palladium in February 2011. Following this role, she went on to play the role of Eponine in Les Miserables in the West End. She has just done that again, actually. She just Eponined again. My joke to everyone is, my favorite part is that she would text me, "I'm dead now so we can talk," when she would die. And then we could talk.
Meaning electronically.
Yes, electronically.
You in Los Angeles, she in London.
Right. Well, I feel like, but you know, you and I text when you're upstairs and I'm downstairs.
That's
so
true
I don't
also.
Know how else that would be. And Danny has an album that she put out, Bring the Future Faster.
That is it, yes.
That is
Hello.
It. Look, there she's going to speak
Greetings.
Now and stuff.
Greetings from across the table.
As opposed to across the pond.
Indeed, much better.
We're currently next door to my room.
Yes.
That was the... now, there's something that I think I've spoken about almost every time on this show, and that is that I really want to be British. I'm not picky as to which kind. Although I could make jokes that wouldn't be funny to anyone who doesn't know the UK. Like, oh no, but I don't want to be from the country. Ah ha 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 ha. But I won't because that's no good for anyone. We're going to talk about British films.
Which we've never done before.
Which we've never done.
I mean, we plugged a lot of British movies, Baron and I.
Because we love British movies.
Over the years
As
have discussed
should.
A number
As we
of
should,
films.
Exactly. Kinky Boots, one of my favorites we've talked about. Mm-hmm. There's so many. And
we'll talk about films of all kinds.
Yeah.
And all eras. You know, in the silent film era, British films almost never made their way across the pond to America. And in the early 30s, when talkies came in, as they did here in Hollywood, there was just no outlet. There were maybe a couple of so-called import or art theaters in New York, possibly L.A., and that was it. And then in 1933, the pioneering producer Alexander Korda, who founded London Films, made a movie called The Private Life of Henry VIII with Charles Laughton. Laughton had just made his Hollywood debut. He went back to England, and this film broke the barrier. It became the first British success in the U.S.
I'm learning this for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to put to,
oh, yes.
to say. Never heard that
and,
before.
Yeah. And
and it's rare that I haven't heard something you've had to say.
That's right.
So this
well,
is
But it really
special.
It was the turning point. It was an absolute turning point. And it's still a great movie if you've never seen Private Lives of Henry VIII, Private Life of Henry VIII.
And if you've never seen Charles Laughton in general, just a
well,
really
yeah.
entertaining human to watch.
Yes. And it won...
To give you a visual of what's happening is my dad keeps his movie guide next to him to use as a resource.
To support my addled memory.
There you go. That's a thing.
To aid and abet my failing
That's a thing.
Brain.
So the image that I would like to give you all is him holding up his own book, looking things up.
Well,
how good
is
this book? Because I can say this. How good is this book? So good he uses it himself.
Yes. I bought the company.
You
right.
bought the
company.
Oh.
Anyway, Charles Laughton did. I was just double checking. He won the Academy Award for Best Actor that year.
Big deal.
It was a very big deal.
And the Oscars had only been around at that
for
point.
For 4 years,
yeah,
5 years. Yes.
Very,
so,
very short amount of time.
So that made it a breakthrough in every possible way. And Korda, who was actually Hungarian, became like one of the pillars of the British film industry. And he and his brothers, too. Vincent Korda, who was a great art director. Zoltan Korda, who became a great director.
Really? Zoltan?
Yes. Zoli to his friends.
Stop it.
And
Zoli. We both, that's such a good name.
Yes. Anyway, and then they started making movies that people, even in the U.S., paid attention to. For instance, Alfred Hitchcock's early movies started coming over to the States.
Oh, Al.
And ultimately, he came over in 1939 and stayed. Then there was another flurry of interest in British films after World War II when Michael Powell and Eric Pressburger made their films like The Red Shoes, which was a tremendous success here. There was one theater in New York that played it for over a year. Baletta Mains, as they called them, went crazy for it. Never heard the term.
I have not heard that term. Yeah. This is a special day.
Dance fans.
Yeah. Baletta Mains.
Yes. And their films are just great. Black Narcissus and The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp. The Paul Pressburger film.
Sorry, I just made that note.
So many wonderful names.
You're going to learn. You're going to love them. They're great, great movies.
It's just a great.
And then in the 50s came the so-called Ealing comedies, named after Ealing Studios with Alec Guinness. The Man in the White Suit, The Lavender Hill Mob, and people still refer to these films. The Lady Killers. And Alec Guinness became an international star.
I've actually heard that Alec Guinness is actually made of Guinness. Were you to cut him open, he'd bleed Guinness. That's probably more of a dream than anything else. Print the legend, Leonard. Print the legend.
Okay. Alec, you know, the guy who played Obi-Wan Kenobi, that guy, he had a career before Star Wars. As the star of an impeccable series of British comedies. And in his path came Peter Sellers, who and Terry Thomas, and a lot of other wonderful British comedians who attracted a good, healthy following here in the U.S. And then the kitchen sink dramas of the 50s and 60s, Look Back in Anger, Room at the Top, all of that.
Kitchen Sink Drama is going to be Danny's next album.
Wonderful.
Kitchen sink dramas.
Anyway, and since then, British films have traveled pretty consistently. Although there's some that are still uniquely British.
Yes.
And that, I mean, I don't think the Carry On comedies ever really caught on over here the way they did at home.
I used to watch those with my grandma on sat cross-legged on the floor every Sunday. She would put a Carry On film.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many, I mean, it's really interesting. Danny and I have one of our major similarities in life is that I spend a good portion of my time in the UK. She spends a good portion of her time in the US. So we speak British and American. And it's one of those things where it's—
I would call that bilingual, would you? I think so.
For the way that it sounds, I definitely— the fact that my—and there's something else you guys know because we did an episode about me getting married is I married a Mancunian. Danny is a Mancunian, but—
Yes,
but,
I am.
Very proud.
Which means?
From Manchester. My husband, who will not come onto the podcast, because I think what would happen— is you'd all love him so much you wouldn't give him back to me. Watching things with him has been really fascinating because I've learned so much of the northern slang and then seen movies that I know full well could never play here because they would just make no sense.
Absolutely.
They would just make no sense.
The humor and the style of the comedy and all
it's
of that.
So it's different.
The same with some of the US films. It's so relevant, and unless you have spent a lot of time there or quite knowledgeable about, you know, the country and some of the humor, it just doesn't carry, does it?
Same with Italian films, French films.
Yes.
Any nationality you care to name. Some films are kind of universal in nature and others are very particular. Very particular to their homeland.
Even Danny and I were talking last night. We were starting to sort of brainstorm, and we were talking about some of the actors, and it's such an incredible thing to see who makes it either direction, what American actors can become beloved there and what British actors can blow up here. Obviously, one of the biggest currently is Idris Elba.
Yes.
Who most Americans saw him in The Wire. That was the first time they'd ever seen him and had no idea he wasn't American. Yeah. Had no idea. And he actually talked about that. He came to my dad's class with the film Rock and Rolla, which is one of the films I would highly recommend and will be recommending today. Big fan of that movie. And he was speaking, and you could see the students going, is he is this a joke? And he talked about how many times people thought he was either kidding about being British when he would start to speak, or they, or I should say, taking the piss. It just wasn't sure. And now he really is famous, I would say almost equally on both sides.
I would agree. He's popping up everywhere.
He's everywhere, as he should.
And gets mentioned for every imaginable part.
Yes.
Including, as we know, James Bond,
which is the big thing right now, he could do because he is just slick as anything.
Another of the great actors of our day is Alfred Molina.
What's
sort of funny about him is that he's played so many nationalities. He's played a lot of Middle Easterners.
Yep.
Because he has that kind of look.
Yep.
Or what we'll call a stereotypical look. His first movie role was Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he played that guy in the cave with Indiana Jones.
That's so funny.
That's his movie debut.
That guy in the cave.
Whose name I'm not sure we're supposed to know anyway.
I don't know.
But the truth is, and I interviewed him.
But what it is, it's he's got an olive complexion. So he was in Frida,
right?
With Salma Hayek playing her husband, whose name
Diego Rivera.
He's a chameleon because he's something you just don't know what. He also, by the way, just plays your average, just American.
Well, yes,
white bread.
He's done American very well and repeatedly. Well, the first time I met him, and he's a lovely man. He said, "No, I don't do a good Cockney. In fact, I do a lousy Cockney. But this is the gist of it." He said, "Hi, Fred Molina here. How you doing?"
That was just
what?
Australian. That was just straight up.
What?
Again, to give you a visual of the inside, my husband is sat here. It's my husband and Danny are sat here, and they both just went, "Ah."
Yeah. A for effort.
Yeah.
And my husband just made a face at me.
D for result. But nevertheless, we have almost never heard his actual voice on film.
It's true.
Almost never.
Certainly not as Australian.
No. Yes. All right. Yes. I can see that's it.
The rest
of the weekend now, that's all I'm going to hear. Well, anyway, folks, Alfred Molina is a chameleon indeed, but he is British.
And incredible. And the thing is, because he's done things like Spider-Man, you have people who know him for that. If you're an indie film lover like we are, if you're into those sorts of things, you've seen him play just a little bit of everything.
I think the first time he really made an impression on me was in Prick Up Your Ears, the Joe Orton film, which is extraordinary.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
I mean, because he can do absolutely anything. It is amazing when you find out sort of what someone's background is. And he also, just as a bonus, happens to be one of the loveliest humans that's ever walked the earth. As I say, we were sat there, Danny and I, and as soon as you start to play this game of what are some of the actors, and we go, oh, well, we love Olivia Colman.
Yes.
And she's a great example of someone who has not really come over in the way I wish she would. A lot of people now know who Catherine Tate is. Catherine Tate is a household name in the UK. Everyone knows who she is. She had a TV show, The Catherine Tate Show, and she had several characters on those shows with taglines and just catchphrase. They've
become a part of daily
they're
life.
A part
whether
of
you realize that you've taken it from The Catherine Tate Show or not.
Yeah.
It's just a part of I guess, the British language now.
It really is, and it's so common to use it. It's true. If you ask someone if they know what it's from, they usually don't.
No.
Now, she has come into American viewers. She's come to them through Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. So that's really how they know her. But I don't know that she'll ever be, unfortunately. She's incredibly talented, so she deserves
I just finished watching her in The Night Manager.
Yes.
On AMC, that wonderful six-part show based on the John le Carré novel, in which she, went toe-to-toe with Hugh Laurie and Tom Hiddleston and a great cast. And she plays character parts.
Yeah.
And she's just always good.
She's always,
always
good.
Solid.
Again, another great British. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
As the Brits would say, she's brilliant.
Yes.
But Olivia Colman is one where, again, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a British person who didn't at least recognize her by face.
Yeah, she's done so many series.
She's done everything.
And Broadchurch being one of the most recent kind of hit series in the UK. I don't know if that made it over here.
Oh, yes.
It did? Okay.
It did, yeah. But she's another one where as soon as I see her name, whenever people ask my dad, they'll say, is there a director you follow, actors you follow? For me, if I see Olivia Colman's name, it doesn't matter what it is, I'm going to watch it.
Yep, me too.
Because she's just so good.
Just this past year, I dare say millions of Americans became acquainted with Mark Rylance for the first time.
Yeah.
One of the great stage actors of our generation.
Yes.
Who I've only seen once on Broadway. I wish it was more often than that. But he is a great actor, and he finally got sort of mass recognition playing the Russian spy in Bridge of Spies with Tom Hanks, the Steven Spielberg film. And Spielberg enjoyed working with him so much that he hired him on the spot to play the BFG, the Big Friendly Giant, which is, you know, brand new. And while it is a motion capture performance with you know, a creature of a character he's playing, you can tell that the face and the gestures and the eyes and the lips are his. Yeah, well, it's definitely his
and
performance.
And we know that's a huge – now with all the technology, that is something. It's not as simple as just they do put all these things on your face.
Yeah, they like little sticky dots.
All those little white dots. It's
like the technology is
the technology incredible. Is wild. The grid system, it's crazy. But but it, that's the thing is it's not enough to just be the part. With these new versions of technology, you really are still acting. And why, like you say, the face is
movement.
Coming through, and it's him.
Oh, yeah, it's subtleties of eye blinks, and they have different sensors trained on the eyeballs, on the pupils. It's an amazing process.
Yeah.
It's an amazing process. Anyway, so there's another name that's now becoming better known, and deservedly so.
Yeah.
Though I don't think he'll ever abandon the stage.
I hope not.
No.
Yeah, right. That's why when you know Kate Blanchett, who obviously she's Aussie, but it's the sort of thing.
Part of the Commonwealth.
She's thank you. I was going to make a prison joke. I can't.
Don't.
I won't. The thing is, she always goes back to theater, and it's the kind of thing where I feel like. Anyone would be so lucky to – we're lucky enough to see her on screen. I can't – you know, theater, kill me now. But there are so many British actors and actresses who do sort of both. And what happens a lot, I find just with my friends, is that most of them do both. That really, if even if you want to be on TV, you start off with some sort of theater. And I feel like that happens a lot more over there than it does here. Here, if people want to be an actor, they tend to – and it is a generalization. They tend to sort of go for TV and film.
Okay. Or more one or the other.
Yeah.
More of a divide.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's definitely something where, I mean, I have friends. So if you want to be on TV, you move to LA. If you want to be in theater, you move to New York. That tends to be kind of the thing. But in the UK, and obviously, again, Manchester, which is the home of BBC now.
Yeah,
and,
they've just relocated.
All kinds of stuff.
City.
Manchester is, I mean, it is a bustling hub. But really, Manchester or London, that's one of each. You can be doing TV and film and stage.
In either place.
Yeah. And it's kind of incredible and different
and
in that
do.
Way.
Many and many do, which I think is wonderful. And
it is
what an
wonderful.
Amazing balance to, because two very different mediums with a very similar skill set, but to be able to do both, like...
Yeah, and I actually think that's part of why they're as good as they are, because something that a joke for us is that 99% of the time when watching a movie, if we see an actor we don't know, and they're really good, we joke, and again, obviously as soon as it's over we look it up, but it's like they're going to be British, aren't they? They're going to be British or Aussie.
Or Aussie.
They're going to be British or Aussie. Oh, that was a really great performance. You're going to be British or Aussie, aren't you? And it's like without fail, and I think it is that. I think it is that to learn how to do both things, which is to be both big and small, you know?
Well, Mark Rylance's performance in Bridge of Spies is a perfect example.
Yeah.
It's a masterclass in subtlety.
Yeah.
In a nuanced performance and yet a very potent and effective one that stays with you.
It's the list is just ridiculous when you start to think about all the different people that you just go nuts for. I mean, I find it really interesting that Benedict Cumberbatch has taken over the way that he has. A person who is not a classic leading man.
No.
But can do anything, does voices. I mean, the fact that he's Smaug, it's like, of the things that one could do.
He's had other cartoon voices.
But, no, he's done a lot. But that's what's so funny, because you have someone like Andy Serkis, folks like that, where that really is their bread and butter. Mm-hmm. Voices are the bread and butter. And then you've got someone like Benedict Cumberbatch.
He's become an institution.
But that's
it's like a Cumberbatch institution.
Yeah. Well, and of course, my favorite thing is the nickname for his fans, which are Cumberbitches.
Oh, I have not heard that.
Oh, really?
That's wonderful.
Even my dad's heard that one.
Yeah.
Because we watched Graham Norton. And when he was on Graham Norton said to him, "Now, do you know what people call you, what your fans are called?" And he said, "Cumber bitches," which, you know what, as names go, I'll take it.
And by
yeah,
the way,
I support that fully.
By the way, we're in the what is generally the newest communication medium right now, the podcast.
Yes.
But one thing that has never been abandoned in the UK is radio, live drama, live radio, drama and comedy.
Yeah.
And Benedict Cumberbatch stars in a wonderfully funny series called Cabin Pressure, which you can find on your mobile device if you look hard enough. It's a very funny situation comedy. And with another good actor, Roger Allam, whose face you know if you don't know his name. Really, really funny. So, and he continued to do it even as he became a star in films. So good for him. And speaking of media and mediums or whatever we were talking about, it is time for us to take a break in this media of – no, in this medium – in this medium of podcasting. Oh, dear. What an effort. What a labor.
You know what it is? It's because we've got two Brits in the house. We're just all drunk
maybe
all
so.
The time.
And I just want to take this I want to take this moment to say for air, for our listeners, to my son-in-law, shut up, Scott. He's sitting in the studio with us, just so you know.
Oh, Daddy, I promised we wouldn't embarrass him. I promised.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back, and I'll be divorced.
Hey, everybody. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They achieve this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron has established partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. As a result, seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. Beef is raised humanely. Chickens are free range. Pork is raised naturally. Regenerative farming practices are used for produce. Blue Apron can be delivered to 99% of the continental U.S. and 99.5% of food deserts, a phrase I've never encountered before until I read this commercial. Because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, they're reducing food waste. Here's something else to think about. Cooking together builds strong family bonds. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. Those who spend a lot eating out or at high-end grocery chains can now spend under $10 per person for a healthy, delicious meal. Here's some of the meals available in June. Spicy Korean rice cakes with snow peas and pea shoots. Sweet chili ponzu catfish and green beans with coconut ginger rice. New England-style salmon rolls with roasted potatoes and chives. Blue Apron knows that when you cook with incredible ingredients, you make incredible meals. So they set the highest quality standards for their community of artisanal suppliers, family-run farms, fisheries, and ranchers. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron is bringing you the very best for less than $10 a meal. New recipes are created each week by Blue Apron's culinary team, and they're not repeated within a year. Customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Choose delivery options to fit your needs. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients, and each one can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Check out this week's menu and get your two meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/Malton, my name, M-A-L-T-I-N. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/Malton, M-A-L-T-I-N. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And thanks to them for sponsoring Malton on Movies. Welcome back to Malton on Movies with Jesse Malton and our guest today, Danielle Hope, otherwise known as Danny.
And we were talking last night, just by the way, her last name is actually Hope. I know that we're in LA.
Thanks,
where everybody
Dad.
Changes. Everybody changes their last names. It's really Rubenstein. But no, it is Hope, Hope Fieldberg Bloom Gold Blatt.
sorry. All right, listen, there's a really good British film playing in theaters right now.
Yes.
That has not got a lot of attention and I think deserves a better break. It's called Genius. And it is a thoroughly British film, even though it was written by an American based on a novel, not a novel, but a book by a prominent American author. But everything else about it is British. There's one American in the cast, Laura Linney. Everyone else, British. It's the story of Maxwell Perkins, the celebrated editor who was the editor of F. Scott Fitzgerald, Ernest Hemingway, and Thomas Wolfe. And in this adaptation of A. Scott Berg's award-winning biography, which was called Maxwell Perkins, Editor of Genius.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
What a Rolodex. You know. Yeah, yeah.
The emphasis is on Thomas Wolfe, played magnificently by Jude Law. And Perkins is played by Colin Firth. And
they couldn't get a good cast. Yeah, sad, no. Sad day.
And Wolf's mistress is played by Nicole Kidman. F. Scott Fitzgerald is played by Guy Pearce in a smallish role. And Ernest Hemingway in just a one scene cameo is played by Dominic West.
Just everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
So
everybody.
Obviously they
just,
all
they were having dinner one night and
right.
said
they all warmed to this script, to this project. It's the screenwriter's John Logan, the ridiculously prolific John Logan, who just created and is producing and writing Penny Dreadful, but who has done everything from the movie adaptation of Sweeney Todd to the last two James Bond movies, and everything imaginable in between. He also wrote the prize-winning play Red, which was just brilliantly done out here by Alfred Molina in LA.
Yeah.
But it's just a great, great play. He has worked in every medium and succeeded in every medium. And he bought the rights to this book, to this biography, 20 years ago, and has nursed it for 20 years with the author's encouragement and involvement to try to turn it into a movie. And I think finally by getting – he probably got one of those stars to say yes. And that got another of the stars to say yes, and that's what got the movie funded.
It was like a chain of texting.
Right.
Like, I'm in. Are you in?
And just to go back to theater for a minute, a lot of that comes from theater. It's actually not, amazingly enough, it's not really from them working on TV shows together, though that happens. Really, most of these people, when you look into biographies, history, and what have you, they almost all did theater together at some point. And again, because you have shorter runs of things and people are in constant movement, there's an influx.
Yeah.
You get people together. So you have someone like a genius like Bill Nighy who can do anything at all, a film that we have recommended before.
And we'll get it into in a minute. I just want to finish with genius.
Okay.
I just want to get this.
Okay, Daddy, whatever
you want.
Get
this thought out. Oh, she never says that. Funny, at home she doesn't say that. Anyway, it's in theaters. It won't be in theaters long. I recommend it. I guess I'm a sucker for it because it's about writing and authors and editors, and it's set in 1920s and 30s New York City.
It was made for you.
Yeah, it was made for me.
What they did was they wrote a story called Stuff Leonard Maltin Would Like.
Yes.
And then you didn't hear you.
And I like it a lot. And, of course, Colin Firth is great. And Jude Law gives a performance that I would say is a shoo-in for an Academy Award nomination if more people see the movie. And if
he's an interesting actor because I think he's really talented. And I think he's shown a range of skills. But there are a lot of people who don't like him and just sort of dismiss him. But every now and then he'll do something.
Well, this is a showcase.
Yeah.
A showcase of a part.
Every now and then, though, he'll do something, and it's kind of one of those where you go, okay, so perhaps that's it. I see you. For the right writing, the right part, the right setting, and you have been raving about his performance. You really have.
It's just great. And the most successful, I believe, I'm getting this right, the most successful independent non-studio film released in the U.S. last year was Eye in the Sky, a British movie, directed by a South African, Gavin Hood, and written by Guy Hibbert, who wrote one of my favorite British films called 5 Minutes of Heaven, which Baron and I discussed, I think, on one of our very first shows together.
Yeah.
It stars Liam Neeson and James Nesbitt, and it's just a killer of a movie. So he wrote the screenplay for Eye in the Sky, which stars Helen Mirren and Jeremy Northam and
Aaron Paul,
all sorts of good people.
Yeah, it's another one where you look through the list of people and you go, oh, okay. And Barkhab Abdi.
Barkhab Abdi, it's a very good part for him.
Yeah, who everyone knows. If I say, I am the captain now, that's how everyone knows him at this point.
Right. And in one of his last performances, the great Alan Rickman.
Who I think we can all agree, just legend. And I think the world agrees.
Well,
legend.
Absolutely. And made a tremendous impact.
He's another one that, because I will say that we saw Alice in Wonderland, it's Alice Through the Looking Glass the other day. And as soon as you heard his voice, I got choked up. And then at the end, of course, the film is dedicated to him and again got choked up. So I've just decided he's not passed away. Mm-hmm. I've just decided that he's on holiday in the Seychelles. And he'll be back soon. That's what I'm going with.
What a great way through film and movies to live on and still remain in people's lives. And
it's true.
Yeah.
The wonderful thing about media is it does outlive you. And if you can make an amazing impact as he truly has on the world, then.
I'm laughing thinking about different things about him. Forgive me. So
one of the things I most enjoy, I only met him once. And he was with Emma Thompson, and they were obviously old
Emma
friends.
Thompson, again, just
casual.
But Emma Thompson, let's just, again, take a moment. Forgive me. Take a moment. Goddess.
Oh.
Goddess.
Yes. Oh.
There is nothing. I will tell you, in my dreams, she and Kenneth Branagh are still together, and I am their child. It's not that I don't love you. It's not that I don't love
you, because
I love you. I love you and mommy all kinds of amounts. But just, like, give me a day. Just give
just
me
the
day to hang out with Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson, and I will just, that would be it.
Well, back in 1999, they made a movie together called Judas Kiss, and which is set in New Orleans. And it's a kind of a mystery, and it's, they play Southerners.
Yeah. Fun fact,
they're obviously having such a good time.
A Southern accent is actually
dyed-in-the-wool Southerners.
It's quite easy. As accents go, English people find the Southern accent quite easy to imitate.
And we're talking Southern America, not Southern England.
Yes.
I'm with you.
We're we are not speaking like suddenly. Oh my goodness, we are the Queen,
darling.
No. It's because of the sounds that they don't make in the South. All my friends in England, when they try to do American accent, they sound something like this.
So the one time I met him for all of 10 seconds, I said how much I enjoyed watching them together playing those Southerners. And he smiled and he said, yeah, it was fun.
I can't. See, again, all the moments that you wish there were teleportation devices. You go, yes. I just want to be a fly on the wall. I just want to be in a room with them being Southern. Just that for a minute. Give me that and I'll take it.
Now, another film I liked last year that a lot of people liked was Paddington.
Oh, Paddington.
And they had such fun casting that movie and pulling in so many wonderful actors, many of them to play something they hadn't played before, something completely against type.
Yeah.
Hugh Bonneville from, Downton Abbey, doing slapstick. Peter Capaldi, who is the current Doctor Who and who is the foul-mouthed star of the British political satire that I've just drawn a blank.
In the thick of it. Oh, in the thick of it. Sorry.
Yes. The American movie was called In the Loop.
Yes, In the Loop. Yes.
And he plays this next door neighbor, this nosy next door neighbor to the family that adopts Paddington Bear, and it's a very funny part. It's a strictly comedy part, and he's vamped by Nicole Kidman, who is the villainess. The Cruella de Vil-like character. Yes. And Ben Whishaw, Imelda Staunton, Sally Hawkins,
Imelda
Julie Walters.
I'm going to keep stopping you as you go past people's names that just – like if I had bells. Imelda Staunton. We were speaking about her the other day because Danny and I are both musical theater nerds. And she was just Mama Rose and Gypsy.
Mm-hmm.
And
wish I could have seen that.
I would have paid – genuinely would have paid any amount of money – to have seen her, because anything she does, chameleon, she looks the same. She's actually one of the few actresses they don't tend to change her look that dramatically.
Anyway, just such fun watching that. Oh, Matt Lucas is in it?
Matt Lucas, who, again, Matt Lucas is, in the UK, that is a household name because Little Britain. He and David Walliams did a show called Little Britain, and it and also one called Come Fly With Me.
Yes,
which was,
wasn't as popular,
but still, as but Matt Lucas still, in the UK is a household name. Household
name. And he's Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
He is both Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
In Alice in Wonderland and the new sequel.
He is one of the funniest, one of the most natural funny people. And I cannot tell you that just on a daily basis, again, much like we're mentioning Catherine Tate, we quote Little Britain back and forth. My husband and I especially quote Little Britain back and forth about 800 times a day.
That must get a little tiresome.
Oh, no. It never, you'd think, it honestly just doesn't get old.
Okay, fine.
Because it's that good. Fine.
And I didn't mention the other great name in that film, which of course is Jim Broadbent.
Oh.
Another of my heroes.
All the noises we're making, just leave us in the corner.
Because he's
swooning
so good.
And glowing.
So good.
Do you know something that I remember watching with you and just loved is him in The Borrowers. He's the father in The Borrowers. And it's just zany and adorable. And so the fact that he can do that and then be evil and be – he's just another one. Just like there's – I just don't believe there's anything
anything
he can't do.
I'm so glad you just mentioned The Borrowers. That's not a film title I've heard in such a long time.
I love that. I love that.
You know
that.
I'm getting home
and
watching that. Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, there's so many other films. We're not trying to – it's not a contest. See how many names we can drop here.
It's also not just English, I will say, because – truly, I think one of the funniest things I find is that even within England, you very rarely know if someone is English, Irish, Scottish, or Welsh because they all play each other all the time.
Yeah.
So we spoke about Robert Carlyle. We were talking about Robert Carlyle at home. And
who I first saw, like a lot
Full
of
Monty.
Americans, in the Full Monty.
You know, but he's in – a lot of people would know he's in Trainspotting.
Yeah.
And just truly, just kind of everything. He's a face that if I showed you, you'd know. Well, I think he plays English about 90% of it. It feels like at least. And he's Scottish. And
it's just a game we play to confuse you
it
guys.
It really
like,
is.
Just help.
If you're doing that, it's working.
It's working. But it is so funny because half the time you'll find out that an actor you really like is Scottish or Irish. And you go, oh, but I've only ever heard them play. Or the other way around.
Yeah.
And it's just, I feel like you guys all...
Like in a minute, I'll come out with some heavy Glaswegian accent and you'll be, ha.
When it sounds like something is, when you hear a glottal fry and noise, it's just a really heavy Glaswegian accent.
I want to mention an actress that I'm very fond of who's still sort of an up-and-comer named Andrea Riseborough.
Mm-hmm.
And I first saw her, I guess, in Brighton Rock, the remake of Brighton Rock.
Which I really enjoy.
The Graham Greene story, which had been filmed before in the 40s.
Yeah.
And then I saw her in Oblivion. With Tom Cruise, where she was very good and also made to look extremely beautiful. And I mean, she has the looks, but you know, some people can.
She has the kind of face that is very easily, it can be glamorous. She can be girl next door. She could be plain.
Yeah.
She has a really good face for this sort of thing. I say for this sort of thing, for film and television in particular, because you can kind of cast her on such a wide array of things.
That's true. And you may have seen her, folks, in Birdman. She was one of the many wonderful women in that film. And they're all good in that film.
Oh, what a movie.
Yeah. You know, I'm not as crazy about that movie as I am about the people in it.
Yeah.
The performances in it. And just tangent, sidebar. Michael Keaton got robbed, but
he went there.
Yeah, I did. No, no offense
oh,
intended
Daddy,
to.
Daddy, you don't got to tell me nothing.
No, but
no,
I mean,
I know.
You know, that's not knocking at all what Eddie Redmayne did that
no,
year.
No. It's not a question because Eddie Redmayne is incredible and but it was such a knockout performance that it is hard.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about awards is frankly, it doesn't really matter. Because just as good.
No, the good work stays there. That's what really matters. That's what remains. After all the shouting has died.
After all the shouting.
Now, folks, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back to drop more names and debate more things and talk all things British.
British.
Be right back. Today's episode of Malton on Movies is sponsored by Howl FM. It's like Netflix for podcasts. With Howl Premium, you get exclusive access to The Layman, a new Howl original miniseries with comedian John Gabris. He loves science. It's awesome. But it's also kind of difficult to understand. So Gabrus goes to experts, like scientists exploring the frontiers of outer space, and asks them to break it down in terms everyone can understand. You can hear The Layman only with HAL Premium, where you also get exclusive access to more than 150 hours of original miniseries and over 100 comedy albums. New episodes and albums are being added every week. Get access to all this exclusive content on your iPhone, your Android phone, and on the web for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code MALTON, that's my name, you get a full month of free trial. To redeem your promo code, make sure you create your account on the web at HAL.fm and enter the code MALTIN, MALTON, at checkout. Remember to hear The Layman with John Gabrus, along with dozens of original audio miniseries and comedy albums. Just go to HAL.fm. That's HOWL.FM. And use the promo code MALTON for a one-month free trial of HAL Premium. It used to annoy me when talk show hosts would say, "We're back." Like, I know you're back. I've just been watching the commercials, and now you're back. Yes, you're back. Well, we're back.
We're back. Under the order of Her Majesty the Queen, we appear for you today. Yes.
No, by royal appointment.
Thank you.
Oh,
thank
yes.
you. By royal appointment. By yes. royal appointment.
It says it on soap. You can get certain right. products that say by, you know.
I will. There are about 1,000 sidebars today because we're talking about a topic that we love so much: yeah. British films and actors.
Yeah.
I'm going to sidebar to Dani because I just want her to share with you for a moment. She was the Queen did call upon her.
Yes, I did actually receive a royal appointment to sing at Buckingham Palace.
And you were how old?
I was 18
and
years old.
And she just booked a holiday, which is what they call
vacations. To New York City. So how could I possibly go to Buckingham Palace when I was on my way to the United States? That is commitment.
That is commitment. And then what did your friend tell you?
My colleague at the time was like, no. You have been requested.
The Queen
you
has summoned you.
Summoned.
So sorry, pal,
so
but
rebook the trip.
Yeah,
so
right.
That's my royal appointment story.
Oh, but there's more to your story too.
There is a little bit more, yes. Well, of course, when you stand out and you're in the Buckingham Palace and the royal family are sat in a lovely line before you and you're singing away, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. And then at the end, we do like a meet and greet, and I'm very overly...
Please just tell them what your dressing room was.
Oh, one of the royal bedrooms. So, of course, I jumped on the bed, maybe took a little hand towel. Shh, don't tell anybody.
You're right.
And this isn't good.
What hand
this
towel?
Isn't public.
What hand towel?
Hand towel? You can't have it. It's mine.
10 minutes from now, someone storms in,
yes,
tears Dani away.
I'm gone. And I was very overexpressive with my face sometimes. And I was telling a story to Camilla. And, you know, people were just taking candid shots, which some people are really magnificent at, and I am not. And I'm pulling this terrible face, which ended up on the front page of the papers the next day, like almost in disgust, yeah, of Camilla.
You know that this, if you make the sound, you know the face that is? That's the face Dani has
me doing
in this
awkward
photo
face, telling a
with
story.
Camilla. But then there was some guy named Jeremy Irons.
Oh, some
who was trying to screw up Danielle's entire life.
Oh,
by whispering horrible things in her ear.
Very cheeky and very fun.
While she was trying to speak to the royals.
So he
photobombed her. He photobombed her.
Yes, this picture is on Google. If you Danielle Hope and Camilla, it's one of the first thing that comes up. So
yeah,
do this now.
Yeah, it's truly. I did. We looked it up, and it's one of those things where you go, And then you politely photobombed him and Charles.
I did, but
like you're smiling
more gracefully.
Yeah,
at the back.
No, you didn't try the whole like, hey, Jeremy Irons. Yes, you were good. You were good about that.
Oh. And tell us a little about one of your mentors, who is a very special figure in show business.
A very special figure is Michael Crawford, who is currently making his return to the West End in The Go-Between, mm-hmm, which is a film I loved as well. Mm-hmm. And he was the original Phantom of the Opera. Some Mothers Do Have Him was like his kind of series for such a long time in everyone's homes. And he was the wizard in The Wizard of Oz with me back in 2011. And is just such, what a magical man. You know, I think it's a nice way to, if you think about the first sentence someone would come up with to describe,
yeah,
him. And he is just
magical.
A magical man with so much to give and still now. in his 70s, still giving and giving, and I just can't wait to see what he's up to next.
You know, one night in the good old bad old days of cable television before it grew to be the 5,000-channel universe, Larry King used to do a weekend edition of his interview show. And on that weekend edition on CNN, he would have sort of veteran show business people that he liked and talk to them for a full hour. And Debbie Reynolds, Tony Bennett, I can't remember all the people he had. And Larry, God bless him, prides himself on never doing any homework or research for an interview.
Because he can. So because this, he can. This, because this, he can.
But, this, but what's funny and what I found instructive was one night he had Michael Crawford. Now, he obviously knew about his great success in Phantom of the Opera. And that's about all he knew. Maybe he knew of Barnum, but I don't know the musical play that I saw him do on Broadway. And he was wonderful in that, too. Anyway, Larry King said, so how'd you get started? And he asked him all these basic, fundamental questions, and it was a wonderful interview.
Yes.
Michael Crawford didn't take offense that he was being asked these, you know, these easy questions. He responded, and he did a wonderful sort of summary and outline of all of his experiences in show business. And I wish I had a copy of that tape because it was great.
Yeah, and it was probably one of the most natural conversations in getting to know each other, really. Yeah. It's just sat down with a brew, cup of tea.
With a brew, there you go,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
If you don't know, the Brits really do drink that much tea.
Yes.
If you were wondering, if you thought maybe this is a stereotype, no, they do drink that much tea.
The first part one of the greatest of a relationship with a British person is learning how they take their tea.
One of the most terrifying moments of my life was making my mother-in-law tea for the first time and just praying to any god available that I got it right because I knew it was over if I didn't. I was well aware it was over.
How did you do?
Well, you see, here's the thing. British people use words like fine. So when I say, Sharon, is that okay? What, is it all right? She goes, yeah, it's fine. And I'm going, fine is not a good word. What I want her to say is, yes, you made it right. Or change, I want more milk, less milk, more sugar, less sugar.
You want a happy dance. You want a celebration.
Instead, in true northern, especially northern female fashion, she just goes, it's fine. Which I have now learned to take as it's good. I have accepted that means it's good. She also has let me stay in the house. So I'm thinking that I probably got it.
You're probably all right.
I got it close enough at least that she hasn't,
you're probably
that
all
I'm
right.
not on the doorstep yeah. crying.
Now, if we're talking about British films,
yes.
we are today.
And we are.
We have to put a little moment aside, more than a little moment aside, for Mike Leigh, one of my heroes. Not one of my daughter's heroes. She's making a face.
I'm not making a face. I've never had such a good nap as when I watched Happy Go Lucky. And by watched, I mean napped.
I love Mike Leigh. I don't love every single film he does, but he has made so many films that are, and I use the word advisedly, unique.
Yeah. Well,
one of a kind.
But this is the thing, too, though, is I do feel he skews toward an older audience
mm-hmm.
only because, first of all, a lot of times the stories themselves, mm-hmm. like one of your favorite films that he just did.
Mr. Turner.
Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few films he's done that they are the word my dad uses instead of slow is deliberately paced. And there is a difference because
nice euphemism, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Because it's not slow. It's not that it's not slow in the sense of like you're sitting there, I just fall asleep. But it is. It is deliberately paced. It is not the kind of thing that you would put on at night because it is bedtime, but they are beautiful films.
Mm-hmm.
It's just definitely a particular taste
mm-hmm.
and not for everyone,
mm-hmm.
which is okay.
Yeah, but his great films are truly great.
Yeah.
And if there were any justice in this world, Timothy Spall
would have
had the Academy Award for his performance as the great British painter in Mr. Turner, yeah. year before
last. If you don't know, though, also his son,
Rafe Spall.
Rafe
yes.
Spall, just if you're not aware, has been doing a lot. He's TV
in the,
shows.
The BFG.
Yeah, he's in the BFG. There you go. He's yeah. in the BFG. Film, TV, and that's his son.
You know, I've never put two and two together.
Really?
That's
yeah.
his son. That's his offspring.
That is.
Now I know.
Yeah. It,
well,
see,
they don't exactly. They don't exactly look like twins.
No, they don't. No.
But,
no.
But no. But it's that's his
well,
son.
Well, and Timothy Spall has been a regular in Mike Leigh's work for a number of yeah. years. In fact, he plays the Mikado the role of the Mikado in Topsy Turvy.
Yeah.
Mike Leigh's wonderful film about Gilbert and Sullivan, which is full of glorious performances.
Yes. Now, I will say one of my very favorite Timothy Spall performances, though, is in Enchanted.
Mm-hmm.
And it only Timothy Spall could. Unique is a word, and that's it. But Timothy Spall can go from being the creepiest, meanest person ever, which he does very well, to an endearing, lovable character. To the in Enchanted, he's a, you know, the whole concept of the film is that they are cartoons who come to life. I say cartoons; they don't know that they're animated. They don't know that they're animated, but then suddenly they find themselves not in their own animated worlds, but in New York City, and he has just. He's just so good, and you just love him. He's the lackey to Susan Sarandon's character,
mm-hmm.
who is the evil witch in the film. And he is just everything. He's everything.
Well, he's just wonderful. He's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And again, so versatile.
Mm.
So versatile. A guy who's come onto my radar, and I should have recognized his name sooner, but his reputation is growing year by year, is Stephen Knight, a writer and occasional director. And you and I saw his film, Dirty Pretty Things.
Yeah, and I mentioned that to Danny last night. Dirty Pretty Things. We've spoken about that film on the show before
mm-hmm.
Because I saw it the best way possible in that I, didn't mean to see it. I was driving. Usually when we go to – the way it works in our household is either my mom or I go with my dad to see a movie. Why, number one, it's more fun to go with somebody else.
Absolutely.
But also because we just like to be together, and we tradesies. Sometimes we battle. Like, if we both want to see something and there's only a plus one, then it comes down to my dad having to hide in the corner while my mom and I just, like,
what was the
argue.
Last thing you battled over?
I don't even remember right now. But anything with Colin Firth in it, my mom will cut you if you try to, like, keep her from it. But there's quite a few. I get my Anglophile love first from mother, then from father. I was just going to take my dad to the screening. I was going to drop him off and do something else. And then sort of thought, well, I'll go in. You know, I'll go in and watch. And there was only a few of us in the room, and it was a very small screening room.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened from there was I was blown away.
Yeah.
It stars one of my favorite actors ever, and I will say ever, Chiwetel Ejiofor, who now people do know who he is. Obviously because of 12 years, I was supposed to say 4 years a slave, but it wasn't four, it was 12, 12 years a slave. He is another one, just knock your socks off, but it's him and Audrey Tautou.
Yeah. Tautou.
Pardon me. Who really hasn't done all that much after making, Amelie, which was so successful in that people adore that film. People really.
She works all the time. It's just not all the films.
Yeah, it's just
get
not.
It's same level of attention
for someone who had that kind of a came on the scene the way she did,
oh,
where
yes.
people went nuts for that
yes.
movie. It's always wild then when they sort of step back. So she plays a very different. She's very serious part, but the film is
hypnotic,
gut wrenching, everything. It's one of those where I was so glad that I had gone in because yeah. after I saw it, we couldn't stop telling people
yeah,
about it. We
yeah.
said, you need to go
well,
see
Stephen
this
Knight, as I said, has been quite busy. Most recently, he created and wrote quite a lot of a really arresting TV show called Peaky Blinders.
Which my parents are
yes.
obsessed with.
With Cillian Murphy.
My parents are obsessed with
Sam Neill.
Cillian Murphy, another one who can do anything.
Yes.
And Stephen Knight wrote and directed a really terrific film called Locke with another great talent. Yes, you know who I mean?
Yeah.
Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy, who can do anything,
yeah.
Plays
truly
a guy.
Do anything.
Truly.
A plays
machine.
A guy who is driving
yeah.
for an hour and a half and talking to various people on his mobile phone.
And that's it.
That's it.
And when I say that's it, I mean that's where the camera stays.
It's a hell of a film.
On him as he drives. The way the film was shot, as we learned, was that way. He did the entire thing and was driving.
Yeah.
I don't remember if they said he was on one of the, if he was on a bed.
Flatbed. Sure,
the way
yeah.
that they usually film car scenes. But whatever it was, they were legitimately driving the car.
Mm-hmm.
Moving the car.
At night.
And he did the entire thing. And they did it several times. So for an hour and a half, whatever it was, he did the – it's because the movie's just him.
Yeah.
Visually, just him. And, I mean, the thing is, again, I do think people now know that you could watch the man paint a wall and that would be plenty. Like, yeah. There isn't anything.
By the way, he's in a new musical.
Yeah.
London Town.
Yeah.
London Road.
Sorry about
the National
that.
Theatre.
Yep.
In the West End, and a lot of the original company from the musical are in the movie.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah. Can't wait to see that.
No, me either.
Yeah, yeah. It's I mean, and he's just one of them. I will mention, because I must, and this is again to keep my marriage healthy, that in that we have decided, and I feel many will agree, that Liam Neeson, anything he's in, I don't care what it is. And again, a very big part of my relationship with my husband is us agreeing that Liam Neeson can do anything, should do any and everything, and we will watch whatever it is that he makes. I love that he can make fun of himself. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen him do that, you really should. He is extremely funny.
Go online and find him with Ricky Gervais
and
Stephen Merchant.
Life's Too Short.
Yeah.
Hysterical.
Oh, and Warwick Davis. Yeah.
Yes. Hysterical. He can do absolutely anything. He's funny. That's the thing people don't. He's Irish. He's very, very funny. You just don't get to see him be funny very often. But yeah, as soon as if we're channel surfing and we come on anything that says Liam Neeson, well, we're watching it. Although I will say, husband had a great line, which was said at a certain point. He's just a bad parent with Taken 3. Like, really? Really, though? Like, you're just a bad parent now. Like, it happens once, fair enough, but by 3, like, why hasn't CPS stepped in? Like, why are they letting you, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Papa? So there's a million more we could talk about. There's so many. We mentioned Bill Nighy very briefly, a film that we love of his, is still crazy.
Which we've discussed on the show.
Which we discussed on the show.
About a reunion of an aging rock band.
And, yeah, glorious. Chris O'Dowd, who everyone, of course, is mm-hmm. aware of now. Although, again, funny because it's kind of stepped out. He's now in your face so much as, and they're not selling him as hard as they were. He's in a movie I really loved called Pirate Radio.
I wanted to love that movie.
I know. A lot of people don't.
I have not seen that movie.
A lot of people don't.
Maybe you have, because in England it was called The Ship That Rocked.
Oh, yes. No, I have.
There
okay.
you go.
Yeah. And that's interesting to me, too, that they change not only the artwork for England and America releases, but also the titles, too.
Yes.
What did you just tell me had a different title?
Zootopia.
Zootopia, Zootropolis.
My husband and I saw that when we were in back in England, and it was called Zootropolis. Here at Zootopia.
Apparently it's because there's like a zoo in the Netherlands called Zootopia or something. And
that's
like
so funny.
Merchandise wouldn't have been able to happen in England.
Apparently,
so.
Though, also.
I don't know. Don't quote me.
They changed in the film. There's like news. And mm-hmm. apparently for different places, they changed it. So if you're seeing it in the UK, they're British. But if you're seeing it in Australia, the newscasters are Australian and uh-huh. same with American. So I haven't actually seen the American actually version. I haven't seen Zootopia. I've only seen Zootropolis.
We can do that.
Yeah,
we
so
do
I
that.
Don't know if they're different or not. But yeah, just, I mean, the names just go on and on and on. The films
in
go
the old,
on and on.
You know, all those years I was editing my movie guide, it drove us crazy because in the old days, old days, they retitled virtually every British film for American release. Drove us crazy. The great Paul Pressburger film called A Matter of Life and Death with David Niven and Kim Hodder and Roger Livesey. Just the most beautiful, haunting fantasy film in gorgeous Technicolor was changed here to Stairway to Heaven, which is not a bad title. But what was wrong with A Matter of Life and Death? It wasn't grabby enough.
We talk about this sometimes because they'll change it and you go, why did you do that? Yeah. The Bjork film, the one that just popped in my head, the Bjork film, Dancer Upstairs, is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. That had a different name. We talk about, say, obviously in our home, just the conversation tends to be film related. And we'll say just what a shame it is at times that they have changed it because then you don't know what it is anymore.
Yep.
You know?
You know what I think?
Hmm.
I think we'll have to do another edition of this show about British film.
Do you know what I think? I think it's tea time.
I think you're right.
I would always agree with that.
I will always agree.
Who's going to pour?
There's never a bad time.
Who's going to pour?
Go on, Jesse.
I'll do it.
Oh, all right.
Go on.
Right. Remember, always tea to the water, never water the tea.
I want you to know that both the Brits in the room just shook their heads. Yes. This is what we need today is just a little motion. That's a motion capture of my Brits nodding. My Brits going, yes, that's correct. No, you're wrong. Yes, that's correct. No, you're wrong. No, and you never put the milk in first. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Although my grandmother did. The only person I had to do that with. My grandmother.
Well, I'm an American and I don't have milk in my tea.
You know,
America.
America. Exactly.
Well, friends, thank you for joining us as always.
Thank you to my Danny.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Danny, for coming. Yeah. It was lovely to have you here.
Thank you.
And thank you to the verbally inactive
Daddy,
Scott.
I need to stay married.
Okay.
Stop right. embarrassing husband.
I'm not trying to embarrass him. I'm just acknowledging him. Is that a crime?
He's waving silently.
Oh, okay, that's
He's
fine.
Waving silently.
If you just need a fix of me.
A Malton fix.
You can find me on Twitter at Leonard Malton. And you can find me online at my newly designed and relaunched website.
Newly designed website. Very Woo! Exciting. LeonardMalton.com.
Yes. Now, if you were getting that on IndieWire, IndieWire and I have gone amicably in different directions.
IndieWire has redone everything.
Right.
And things have changed to their bloggers. And so now we have our own. It's just, it's the same. When you typed in LeonardMalton.com, that took you to IndieWire. Now, when you type in LeonardMalton.com, you'll come to our new site.
Yes.
And you can exciting
you can
new
for free and
site.
All of that kind of thing. Anyway.
And Facebook, of course.
Right. In one form or another, I hope to see you soon. And we'll see you on this program next week. Bye-bye.
God save the Queen.
This summer.
You sent her, you monster.
The world's greatest screenwriters.
So it appears it is to be a chess match, after all.
And Hollywood's brightest actors.
How do you just stop believing in it all?
Will come together.
Eventually, you will slip.
In a cinematic explosion.
I hope you trip and break your bloody stiff neck.
The likes of which podcasting has never seen.
Whew, end of the goddamn world, huh?
The Blacklist Table Reads takes the best screenplays from the famous Blacklist website and brings them to life with cream-of-the-crop talent and beautiful sound design. It's like a movie for your ears.
You have no idea how committed we are.
The story continues every week with a new movie every month. The Blacklist Table Reads, hosted by me, Franklin Leonard, and not in the movie trailer voice. Check it out on iTunes, at wolfpop.com, or on your favorite podcasting app. We'll see you there.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.